Welcome to VI Talk, sharing ideas, information, and support.
Very tiny eyes. So when they removed the cataract, they couldn't see the lens in. So I was literally, you know, severely visually impaired since birth. I've had countless treatments. I've had secondary glaucoma, I've had cornea failures, I've had a detached retina. You name it, I've had it. And the honest truth is, without the treatments I had at Moorfields, without the surgery, I would have no sight. As it is, I'm really, really delighted to still have around 660 vision, so I can just about see the big letter on the eye chart. I can read, I can get around, I can, you know, navigate around London myself. So I'm very, on a personal level, I'm extremely grateful for the care and support I've received at the hospital. I've worked in the charity sector for the past 20 odd years, and so when I spotted completely randomly on the charityjobs.com website there's an advert for the chief exec of Friends of Moorfields, I thought, I've got to go for this, I've got to apply for this role, and I think they were quite pleased to have a visually impaired patient who could also, you know, really promote the work of the hospital and support people.
Moorfields is out in London.
Moorfields is in London, yes, it's. There's a main hub at City Road, which is near Old Street. Moorfields also has 32 smaller satellite sites, all really within the M25 area. We do have, our patient access group does have close links with Manchester Eye Hospital patient access group. So there are links between Moorfields and Manchester, but the feeling among the management at Moorfields is that if they wanted to do something well, they need to keep it within a sort of smaller confined area, so they are limiting it to London. And the idea is the Moorfields consultants go from the hub at City Road out to the satellite sites. So they have all their training and development is done in the main site at City Road. So as I said, there are two charities that support Moorfields Eye Hospital. There's the Moorfields Eye Charity, which is a very big they're primarily fundraisers, so their main task, their main job is to raise as much money as possible to support the work of the hospital. And a lot of the money that they raise and goes on to funding research. So they do a lot of research into stem cell development, that they potentially might pay consultants' salaries. There's recently been an award for a big grant to research genetic eye conditions. So one of the consultants has got funding for a project that will potentially look at how and why genetic conditions happen. Friends of Moorfields are rather different. What we do is we support, our primary concern is patient experience. So our focus is making sure that when somebody comes to Moorfields for whatever reason, their actual visit to the hospital is as comfortable and as easy and as pleasant as it can possibly be, given that we're an NHS hospital, and the fact is you're potentially going to be waiting a long time in clinics, you know, and there's very little that can actually be done about that. But what we try to do is make sure that we provide equipment, training, support, volunteers, to make sure that when you are at Moorfields, you get the best possible experience you can. So I just want to kind of talk through a little bit about Friends of Moorfields' strategy for the next 3 years and how we want to do that, and how we want to make sure that the patients who do come to Moorfields have the best opportunity. So the most important thing we do, by far biggest piece of work we're responsible for, is having volunteers who work. We have a team of 200 volunteers who work in the hospital, helping patients with directions. So if you can't find, if you're asked to go from one clinic to another, or telling people where they've got to go, taking them to their clinics, making sure they've found the right person to help them. They also run a hospital shop. We have an information desk that meet and greet patients when they come in. We also have people that provide what we call the peer-to-peer support. So at the moment we run a buddying program, which puts one patient in touch with another when they have a particular condition. And one of the challenges at the moment for me is that that buddy studying scheme is only available for people that have actually lost an eye, so it's only available for prosthetic eyes. Whereas I think if I can expand it out to other conditions, I think we could all, even just talking to people over the last couple of days, everyone's got their story and everyone's so interested in each other's eye conditions, and actually being able to put people together to communicate with each other is a huge thing. And like I said, at the moment I am limited to just Moorfields patients because our charity objectives are only for that for people within that trust. So volunteers is a huge thing, and what I'm asking more of people to do is give up their time rather than give up their money. But what we find is people get such a great, you know, benefit, real reward for volunteering and from helping out and supporting other patients and other people in the same positions. We're looking to increase the number of volunteers. We're looking to increase to make sure that every single clinic within Moorfields has at least 2 volunteers at all times.
Have you ever got anyone with a vision impairment?
Quite a lot, almost all of them. In fact, the majority of our volunteers are either patients or ex-patients, or there are some that are relatives and friends of patients.
Yeah.
But yes, and obviously I'm visually impaired myself. The rest of my team, the team that I manage, are all fully sighted.
So a blind person, you didn't say a blind person, right? Could you take so-and-so to this clinic?
If you know Moorfields very well, yes, we could. There's no reason why. A lot of the blind people know the layout of Moorfields better than a lot of fully sighted patients. I mean, obviously you'd be trained, and we would look at where you'd be best situated, but we've certainly got, I'm just trying to think now, we've got at least 4 total volunteers. What we would probably do is look at where an individual's skills would fit best. So it might be that somebody with a very severe vision impairment would be best sitting in a clinic talking to patients, talking to other people who've got that same condition. The hospital very, very much wants us to increase the number of volunteers, the number of people that are there visible and available. So when the reality is, whether you're visually impaired or not, you don't go to Moorfields unless there's something wrong with your eyes. So the fact is, if you come into you're coming into an environment where you don't know what you're doing, where you're going, and quite often for people being temporarily visually impaired is almost more terrifying. Somebody who's to all of us, it would seem like they've got the most wonderful sight, but because they've had something wrong, that everything's blurry to them, and that's traumatic. So trying to find a way to make sure that people are greeted and made to feel as comfortable as possible when they come is hugely important to us. And just to the way people feel. We also do a lot of work in the children's unit. Next door to Moorfields is the Richard Desmond's Children's Centre, which is also part of Moorfields. It's just a separate children's unit. And those of you with children will know that it's bright, colourful, friendly place. Friends paid for play therapists. So if you bring a child to Moorfields while they're waiting for their appointment, they'll be played with. And we also have full-time play therapists in the children's A&E. So whilst they're waiting, they'll be played with until they get called. And that makes it much, much less stressful for the parents and for the consultants because the child's happy and content and hasn't just been sitting waiting to be called. So that's our main, by far our biggest focus is sort of expanding on the peer-to-peer, the volunteer support, getting people in and around the hospital helping each other, and getting involved with other patients. And we are looking at expanding our information service and what information we give out to people about conditions. One of the things we've found particularly is that, as Linda mentioned earlier, the aging population is huge. We're getting more and more people with conditions like age-related macular degeneration and glaucoma that are completely terrified and confused by what they've learned. So putting them in touch with other people is a real benefit. The second thing that we do at Friends is we provide a grants program to the hospital and to any doctors and consultants to pay for pieces of equipment that's going to make life better for patients. We've recently just agreed to fund a patient buzzer system, which means that when you're waiting hours and hours, you can get check in with the receptionist and be given a buzzer, so you can then go off anywhere in a hospital, you can go and get yourself a cup of tea, and when you're about to be called, your buzzer will go.
Like at the airport.
Like at the airport, yeah. That's going to be available for all patients in Moorfields now, so that people can go and have a coffee rather than just sit in rows and stare ahead until their name's called.
That's an idea.
So I think that's going to make a massive difference to the patient experience.
Having been to Moorfields with a child, and I remember we walked into the waiting area and it said, Professor Moore, 41 patients. He was thinking, oh my God, now you've got to fix that train to put that together.
Yeah.
And what am I going to do with this? I could have taken up to the Tower of London, or something else. That's absolutely, and it just shows that you've listened to feedback, because I fed back and said, it's ridiculous in our way, it just really proves that you have actually listened to feedback and acted on it, which is really positive.
That's one of the key things that people, that everybody in Moorfields is worried about, everybody's talking about, is patient waiting times. It's one of those things that is a huge frustration to everyone, but it's an NHS hospital, and funding is as tight as you can imagine. Moorfields is actually in a very strong position of being one of only 7 NHS trusts to surplus this year, so we have, Moorfields is doing well, but next year, as a thank you for doing so well, the NHS have decided to cut the amount of money that they're going to be giving them, so next year, who knows. But we've also provided, we paid for a camera in the oncology department, which means that when you're having your eye, previously you had to have your eye photographed, this is particularly people who may have eye cancer, which is a very rare type of melanoma. Most cases, in about 95 cases of tumours or things in the eye, it's malignant. There is no cancer. But it obviously has to be photographed, yet they have to be sure. And it's a very, very stressful environment if you think you might be waiting to be told you've got cancer. And you have to go and you have to have it photographed with this camera, then with that camera, then with that camera, and you can wait in it. Patients were potentially waiting up to 2, 3, 4 hours just to get their photographs done, then go back to the consultant to be told whether it was okay or not. So we've recently purchased a camera that can do it all in just one single image. So that was one of the biggest things that we spent, was about £100,000. What it means now is that people with cancers can go and have their eyes photographed straight away and get their results often within an hour of arriving rather than 3 or 4 hours later. We've also paid for a laser so that people in Northwick Park and Ealing hospitals don't have to come up to City Road to have a 5-minute laser treatment if they've got glaucoma. So everything we do is about going patient experience, but that's above and beyond what the NHS would normally fund. So the NHS had a solution for people with eye cancer. Yes, they had the things in place to be able to tell someone whether their tumours were malignant or benign, but you had to wait several hours to do it. One thing friends don't get involved in, and I feel quite strongly about this, is that we don't get involved in trying to fund and make Moorfields accessible, because I think that's something that the Trust has to do, that it should do. And I think if you start trying to make accessibility a charitable extra, then that's the start of a slippery road. So whilst I sit on planning group meetings and I attend and I meet with the senior management team, the estate team, and I really fight for accessibility, I'm not prepared to put charitable funds into trying to make that happen. Having said that, there is a lot going on, there's a lot of work going on. The Moorfields are trying to be leading on the Accessible Information Standards Act, that everybody should have, these patients should have been contacted to ask what their preferred format is. We do fundraise. We obviously, everything we do costs money. It's not free to run a volunteer service, but we've been very, very fortunate that we were left. So we've had some significant legacies and things left to us. So we have got the money to try and make things as good as possible. So one of the things I wanted to kind of ask you people here is for any ideas and suggestions and thoughts. And not necessarily, it doesn't matter whether you're a Moorfields patient or not. All of us go to eye hospital appointments at some point. So how do we make that better? How do we improve things? That's kind of what I wanted to talk to you all about. So I'm hoping that there'll be a few questions and suggestions and a bit of discussion. anyone's got any thoughts, please do let me know.
I've been to City Road and St George's and Norfolk Park, and one of the things, mind you, this was quite a while back, so maybe things have changed, but was the total lack of visual awareness, you know, getting your name called and someone disappearing into the ether sort of thing, you know, badly lit corridors, that sort of thing. Who kind of trains the staff to be, you know, aware that not everybody coming in with an eye problem has good sight?
That's something they are working on. They, all staff in their induction training have to have to wear simulated spectacles and they go through, they have an awareness training. It's part of the staff induction is visual awareness training. I know that's only been put in place in the last 18 months.
Right.
We've also produced a video about leading and guiding supporting visually impaired people, which I was actually in, which is quite interesting. And again, that's a mandatory for all staff.
Because you turn up to one of these clinics, I remember St George's, which was just 6 years ago. Oh my God, it was an absolute mayhem. It was so loud, you couldn't hear anything. It was actually quite a traumatic experience. To the point where it puts you off.
Yeah.
I don't know if statistically they can work this out, but I wouldn't be surprised if there are visually impaired people who stop attending, because actually it's so traumatic, the event, and you know, it's that they'll choose to just go to their local eye department rather than Moorfields, because St George's was awful. Norfolk Park wasn't, it was fine.
St George's, they've got a very difficult environment, and they are actually going to be building a whole new hospital at St George's on the site, so I think that's one way to address it. But I'll certainly feedback. Yeah, I think it is visual awareness training for the clerical staff has got to be a priority.
What about maybe, I go to a dentist, and what they're doing is they text you the day before your appointment. I mean, I don't know if that costs a lot of money, but I was thinking if, I don't know if all hospitals do it, but if, say, so they don't forget their appointment.
They do text you a week before Moorfields, actually.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a great system. Yeah.
It does actually make a huge difference, especially if you've got 6 months appointments. Are there any other thoughts and suggestions? I mean, I'll certainly. Yeah.
Tom, sorry, you probably can't see me. Can I ask a question?
Yeah, of course, yes.
I went to Moorfields about 30 years ago.
Oh, I know Tim
Hitch. Yeah. Anyway, my point question was, do you know this new law that you have to send patients that are visually impaired an alternative format?
Yeah.
In particular, do you find that's working? At more than, you know, people that can't see are getting it on a CD or on a
everybody at Moorfields has, I believe every patient has been written to or contacted or phoned and asked what is their preferred format.
Right.
Moorfields, it's incredible that they've only just done it, but Moorfields have only just purchased a braille machine so that everything can now be sent out in braille or audio.
Well, the reason I'm asking this is my hospital in Exmouth, I've actually spoken to the manager there, the practice manager, last year. But unfortunately, I'm still getting it even yesterday, the letter, which I'm struggling to see with the phone that I use.
No, you've got a legal right. The law is you have a right to have it in whatever.
And I was only out there last week about something and re-endorsed this one. And I'm still getting a letter about an x-ray in print. So what do you think? I should
definitely contact the chief exec of the hospital. Right.
Yeah,
you know, I'm right in saying you have to provide it to me in the format that
I'm in. If I remember right, wasn't it sort of April or May last year that this
it was last, yeah, it's been, in fact, it's been nearly a year now.
That's right, well, they should have run their act together by now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stop sending this nonsense out.
I'm just saying
it's
an endemic problem. I mean, my daughter, now she's 18, she's accepted for herself rather than come through me. And she had a rheumatology last week, and I phoned up and I said, she's marked, her body's marked as large of it. And she said, oh, no, that's only for her eye.
That's,
you know, it's not the eye.
And what I've been told is actually the internal computerised NHS system don't have it, aren't set up to be able to flag different things, in different departments. They should be. I mean, it's just wrong. It's as simple as that.
There's plenty of technology there for transcription.
It's not rocket science.
I mean, I can only do things on a CD right now.
Well, the other thing that you should say to them, if they say you have the technology in place, you say it's your legal duty to provide this, and you can then send it to either the RNIB, the commercial team, or a private transcription company, and they will do it for you, and you have to pay for it. And actually, they're allowed not to have the technology, but they're not allowed not to do it. So if they can't do it, then it's their duty to pay for it.
I think they've got the technology to produce it. I think what they don't seem to be doing, what all NHS trusts seem to suffer, is the flagging.
Yeah.
That's a problem. So it seems that because there's not necessarily a linking of medical records, they can't. It's wrong, and they are trying to work on it.
I mean, I've had them from Exmouth Hospital, MERD and E in Exeter. It's the same situation. We've got a guide dog lady working there. Perhaps I should have a word with her to see if she can push it a bit harder.
There's also a huge training issue. Just last week I was actually delivering training to all the admin and clerical staff at Moorfields about why these accessible information standards is important. And how, I sent them, just imagine if you had a letter in Braille. If you had something that you knew that was that important and it was in Braille, and you can't read Braille. Why should you expect us to... And I think, getting things accessible, there is a massive, massive training issue, and there is a massive sort of awareness, which I'm sincerely hoping. I've been in post 2 years now, and I think actually having a visually impaired person in quite a senior position has made a difference to other people's attitudes.
So the person above the practice manager would be the executive of the hospital?
To be honest, that one thing you could do is to see if there's a PALS in the hospital, patient advice and liaison service. They would potentially be an important first contact. But if all else fails, simply write to the chief exec of the hospital. They all reply. I know the chief exec of Moorfields does reply to every letter that he's in person, to every letter he receives. It might be that he'll say go to PALS, but I think this is the law, and it's you've got a right to. Because what if they're giving you confidential information and you have to ask someone else to read it to you? That's highly inappropriate.
It is inappropriate. I quite agree with that. I didn't make this point to this practice manager when I spoke to him. But why should I have other people reading my medical note, should we say?
And I think that's why the law came about in the first place.
Yes, that's right.
And I think, as with everything, it's going to take time, but it is improving.
Yeah, right, thank you.
Are there any other sort of thoughts about practical things we could perhaps do?
One of the things I always used to find really useful at City Road is the green stripe from the station to the hospital, but over the years it seemed to wear away, so I was wondering, has it been repainted?
It hasn't yet, actually. One thing is, I don't know how many people know about this, but there is a look to moving Moorfield City Road to a new site. It's at least 10 years away, because they haven't even bought the land yet. But eventually they're looking to move Moorfields to King's Cross, and having it on a purpose built.
Near King's Cross Printing?
Yeah, the old St Pancras Hospital was.
What's the nearest tube station at the minute?
Old Street.
Oh, okay.
So this is apparently imminent, but they've been talking about this certainly for the last 2 years that I've been in post. They've been saying they're about to sign a deal. It's a shame, but the reality is that the site at City Road is unfit for purpose. It's over 100 years old. It's a building that's costing a lot of money, and it's a building that simply isn't accessible. That's one thing that they are aware of, so they are looking to move.
So, of course, because this might happen in the far distant future, they're not going to paint the lovely green stripe.
I will put you again. Everyone's asking for this. That's something that everyone's asking for the green line to be moved.
It's a job for volunteers.
Do green lines all good and well, especially for people who've got a vision impairment?
So,
I said the green light's all good and well, especially for people who've got like visual impairment. But I was at Moorfields a couple of weeks ago, helping out a friend. And I was leaving to get there to go back to Old Street Station. Now it looks easy going from the hospital straight down to the to the station, because plus I've got a guide dog with me. But the thing is, the stairs going down is basically right in the centre of the pavement. So if you think about it, if you take a wrong turn or you go so close to the shoreline, you miss the stairs down into the kind of like the station. So it's all good, like, you know, the green eyes are going to work, but there's no physical way of knowing when you're there unless your dog finds it for you. Now, for most people, that can work. But for someone who doesn't have, like, you know, all confidence, you miss that turning or you miss that, you know, entrance, you can just, yeah.
There's something maybe on those stairs to highlight, yeah. I mean, that's something more for TfL, I think, but Transport for London.
Yeah.
But certainly, yes, it's certainly. Which is one of the reasons for the green line. I guess there's nothing obvious that says the green line is for Moorfields. The green line is actually raised. It is actually raised for Kate. But I will, yeah, we will look at that. That's a question.
And we'll say. I had a problem when I'm discharged from Moorfields now, but when I went, I had to go in evening clinics, and I live in Devon, and that was a major problem because my, like, the last train home was like at 8 o'clock in the evening, and my appointments, sometimes I wasn't seen till 7, half past 7, so that was a big problem.
Can we just keep the noise down a bit so it gives people a chance to be heard?
And so I had to sometimes if I went up at short notice, I had to stay overnight as well. For example, if because I had glaucoma, if my pressures were up, they did surgery the next day. So it was a big problem.
I mean, that's one thing they're trying to address in terms of that's a training issue for clinic staff, really, I think, to make sure that people know when. They no longer operate a first come first served thing, so they do try to put people travelling a long distance, or they tend to, I believe, try and put appointments if you've got, say, two appointments with two different clinics.
Yeah,
try
no,
to make
my
sure that's on the same
well
day
the clinic the it used to be that my clinic was always a Wednesday evening, and that was there was no other time that the specialist saw me. It was always a Wednesday evening, and I had one on a. So I had, like, glaucoma on a Wednesday evening, retina team on Tuesday, and then cornea on Thursday. So it was all different appointments and different days, and it was, very hard to do. Because I work as well, so.
I'll certainly feed that back in. I think they're looking at ways to improve systems, because that's a huge frustration. And one of the problems is because everyone's more than such a centre of excellence, most people do travel a long way.
I found out, I don't know if you still do it, but I found out a secret when I was a patient there, that if you have a rail card and you travel regularly to Moorfields, you can, they pay for your rail card, your disabled person's rail card. Yeah, they do.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so you can claim it back. You pay for it and then you claim it back. But I think you have to go very regularly, I think it's like every 3 months or something, or maybe more than that, but it's a well-kept secret, but it's, yeah.
Thanks, well, I should find out, I should double-check whether that's still going, and if it is, I'll make sure everyone knows about it.
Yeah.
Rather than the secret.
Yeah, it's really good.
Is that something
that's
really important for patient experience?
Yeah.
Right, just a couple more minutes, so if anyone else has got anything else that they would really Well, I'm taking all this in, and I will be feeding this back to all your feedbacks and comments and thoughts. I will feed this back to whichever teams. There's some things that friends can't do, and there's a lot that friends can do. But it's about trying to.
I think what you said about not taking all the accessibility is really important, because I think you're right to fight for the need for them. It shouldn't be charitable money that's being. Shouldn't have charitable money providing what's actually a statutory service.
Exactly.
And I think that's about, and I think it's easy to get a lot of flack for the fact, people say, you don't charitable part of a big organisation, they have a legal duty to provide those standards.
I feel very strongly about that. I've had people saying, "Can't you?" Because when we put out a call to all the hospital staff saying, "What things do you want to be grants? Do you want to receive?" And one of them said, "You know, can you help us make Clinic 2 wheelchair accessible?" And I said, "No, that's not a charitable thing. Absolutely. That's not, you know, you have to make Clinic 2 wheelchair accessible full stop. If you start getting charities involved in doing that kind of thing, then that's..."
They'll lose money.
Yeah, it's not even losing money, it's about the mindset. If you start, as soon as the chief exec and the senior management team start thinking of accessibility as a charitable thing rather than a statutory thing, then we've got problems. So they actually did come to friends and say, would you pay for a post to support the accessible information standards, which is what we were talking about earlier. And I feel so strongly that post should exist, but I don't think it should be a charity post.
No.
You know, I think, and actually, because we refused, the trust have been forced to spend their own money on it, and actually that makes it much more ingrained into the actual framework of the hospital rather than, well, this is something nice and cosy and extra. And that's what friends are all about, is providing added extras and added benefits rather than core services. The core services, we've all got a right to an NHS. We've all got a right to good treatment and to be treated fairly and accessibly. What we don't have, what friends try to do is make it even better. So we're trying to make it just more comfortable, just a bit nicer.
Angela, another question. With this access to all areas, sorry for taxes and that, have you had any of your sort of patients that you communicate with? Obviously, got guide dogs, but have you still got an issue with these people refusing to give them lifts and rides in taxis?
To be honest, not so much around Morpheus, because I think that a lot of the people travelling around London are in black cabs, the services are, but you know, certainly the black cab services are very
more expensive, but the hospitals
do have a contract with a taxi firm, that so if you go to the Moorfield reception, they've got a contact, and they will always take
jobs,
I believe.
Can I just think Jets on here?
Sorry.
No, the only taxis you'll probably ever, mainly private hire vehicles, who's never known anything about guide dogs before, or certain Uber drivers as well. So that's the only times you'll ever probably have problems with black cabs and the taxi firm you mentioned. You do 0% problems, really, to be honest. So.
Yeah, I think it's
not something particularly that affects Morpheus patients, but I think that's more because of our location It's about making sure people know their legal rights.
Yes, and, you know, yeah, it does always.
It's kind of an education.
Mm-hmm. Does it really when they drive off and leave you standing there? Thank you anyway.
Yes, right, it's 5 to 2. Unless anyone's got any final
questions.
Well, thank you all for listening.
You can contact us by emailing podcast@vitalk.co.uk, on Facebook by searching for VI Talk, on Twitter @VITalkPodcast, and our website address is www.vitalk.co.uk.